We will ask again. Not that we will hesitate to ask again.
For the record, Your Honor, class 73 Northwestern.
Everybody's a wildcat here. Look at this. Not everybody.
There's a plus guy in the crowd.
Please don't assume there's a lack of interest in your case here. 95% of the audience leaving.
If you want to round up some friends and bring them in, go ahead. Yeah.
All right, we're ready to move to the next case of the day, appeal number 03-4148, Thomas Damnitz versus Jesse Montgomery. Mr. Warzen.
Good morning. My name is Matt Warzen. I represent Thomas Damnitz. This is an extraordinary case in which we ask this court to find that an Illinois trial court's exclusion of certain evidence violated Thomas Damnitz's Sixth Amendment right to present a defense. We call this case extraordinary for three reasons. Number one, the evidence that was excluded was critical to establishing Damnitz's theory of defense. Number two, the Illinois Appellate Court held that the excluded evidence should have been admitted as a matter of Illinois law. And three, no Illinois court has addressed Thomas Damnitz's Sixth Amendment claim, and therefore there is no state court judgment entitled to deference under Section 2254D. We do not ask this court to issue a writ of habeas corpus. Rather, we ask that this court find a Sixth Amendment violation and remand these proceedings to the district court so that the state court record can be made a part of this, the record in this proceeding, and the district court can assess the Sixth Amendment violation in the context of the whole trial and make a determination of whether there is actual prejudice within the meaning of Section 2254A. So moving to our first point of what makes this case unique, that the excluded evidence was critical to establishing Thomas Damnitz's self-defense claim. On November 29, 1987, Thomas Damnitz shot a man by the name of Francisco Vargas in self-defense. The testimony at trial was undisputed that on that morning, Vargas and his friend Alan Martinez beat Damnitz viciously on the head with a board. Damnitz retreated into his home momentarily and shortly thereafter shot Mr. Vargas. Under Illinois law, Thomas Damnitz needed to convince...
You mean he retreated and then returned and shot him?
That's correct, Your Honor. And that's the critical point here. Under Illinois law, Thomas Damnitz needed to prove that he had a reasonable belief that he had to carry a gun, that he had a reasonable fear for his life, and he had to explain that time gap. Now, in order to do that, if the jury would have had context and would have had evidence of actual acts of violence against Thomas Damnitz and his family by Mr. Vargas's gang, the Spanish Cobras, they could have taken those acts of actual violence and coupled those up with the violent acts of that morning. And we submit that that would have supported a reasonable fear for Thomas Damnitz's life. Now, the evidence that was admitted only undermined Thomas Damnitz's credibility with the jury.
What did the evidence show as to the amount of time that transpired between the two events?
Judge Pallmeyer's opinion states that it was a couple minutes.
I mean, that's the state courts in Illinois found it was a few minutes where
and I believe
he changed from victim to aggressor, I guess.
Correct. And I would just note that the state court trial record is not part of this record, and so I can only base that answer on what I got from the appellate court opinion. And
which
then
is presumed to be correct, though.
Correct. So it was a couple minutes. Now, the evidence that did get in was significantly less compelling and therefore only undermined Thomas Damnitz's credibility, because the evidence that got in would not support his claim fear for his life. For instance, he put on testimony that Vargas shouted gang slogans at Damnitz from a playground across the street, or that Vargas confronted him on the sidewalk as Damnitz strolled his infant daughter around the neighborhood. Thomas Damnitz was not allowed to present any evidence of actual violence against him and his family, and because of that, he was denied his fundamental right to present his theory of defense. This case is also unique for a second reason, and that being that the Illinois Appellate Court held that as a matter of Illinois law, this evidence should have been presented to the jury. The state now argues that the gangster violence evidence may have misled the jury, or it may have been repetitive of other evidence before the jury. But this court has held on a number of occasions that when a state court makes a ruling as to matters of state law, that is binding on the federal habeas court. And so when this court conducts the Sixth Amendment analysis and weighs Thomas Damnitz's interest in having this evidence before the jury, the state had very little interest to exclude the evidence when its own court is on record holding that that evidence should not have been excluded but should have been presented. The third point that makes this case unique is that Thomas Damnitz, that no Illinois court addressed the Sixth Amendment claim here, although Damnitz did give the Illinois courts a fair opportunity to do so. He raised the Sixth Amendment claim in the post-conviction proceedings, in the trial court, in the appellate court, and in his petition for review in the Supreme Court of Illinois, and no court addressed this. And so, as I stated, there is no state court judgment entitled to deference under Section 2254D. Those three factors, we submit, require a finding of a constitutional violation and make this case unique and distinguish from the many other cases in which this court has declined to find a Sixth Amendment violation. I'd point out, for instance, in the Horton case handed down last week, this court declined to find a Sixth Amendment violation in the habeas context, but there are two distinguishing factors. One being that there, the defendant, although some of the evidence was excluded, this court found that he did still get to argue his theory of defense. And the same cannot be said here. The second distinguishing factor would be that there, the Wisconsin Court of Appeals conducted a Sixth Amendment analysis. And although this court found some aspects of that Sixth Amendment claim to present a close question, at the end of the day, this court deferred to the Wisconsin Court of Appeals decision under Section 2254D. So, in summary, we ask that this court find a Sixth Amendment violation, but again, we're not asking this court to issue the writ of habeas corpus. We request that the proceedings be remanded to the district court so that the state trial record can be made part of this record, and the district court can then review that record de novo and assess the Sixth Amendment violation in the context of the whole trial and determine whether or not that violation caused a substantial and injurious effect on the jury's verdict. I'd reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Mr. Iskovich.
Good morning, Your Honors. Mr. Worzen, may it please the Court. My name is David Iskovich with the Illinois Attorney General's Office on behalf of the respondent. If I could just leave off where counsel's discussion about the standard of review here, Unfortunately, I can't stand here and say that the AEDPA applies because it would appear that it does not. The state post-conviction court was confronted with this claim and deferred to its previous ruling on direct appeal, which solely reviewed the claim under the auspices of state law. That being the case, however, the petitioner is still not entitled to Sixth Amendment to habeas relief under his Sixth Amendment theory. Implicit in petitioner's argument is that the defendant or petitioner was absolutely precluded from presenting his defense, which would be a violation of the Sixth Amendment right to present a defense. Seriously understated, however, is the potency of the evidence which was tendered by the petitioner to advance his theory of self-defense. As far as the episode in which the petitioner describes as a playground shouting match, that seriously understates the encounter between the petitioner and the victim and his fellow gang members. In that episode, the petitioner was the subject of taunts and threats from across the street. The petitioner himself went over to see what was going on and told the groups assembled that he didn't appreciate the taunts and threats. And during this encounter, the members of the Spanish Cobras and Vargas himself were brandishing baseball bats and surrounded petitioner. The episode was only broken up when police arrived. On a second occasion, a second set of facts which were admitted into evidence by petitioner to support his theory of self-defense, the victim, Mr. Vargas, and another fellow gang member approached the petitioner as he was taking his infant daughter for a walk down the street, again threatened him with violence, and said that the only reason they weren't going to commit violence on him at this time is because his infant daughter was present. The jury was also informed that the Spanish Cobras and the Freaks, of which petitioner is a member, were rivals. And the jury also learned that the Spanish Cobras were not adverse to committing murder, as one of the witnesses, Juan Quiñones, testified that members of his gang, not the Freaks, had been the subject of violence leading to murder. One thing that distinguishes this case from others which petitioner has cited is the fact that there was no absolute denial or preclusion of the right to present a defense. The petitioner's evidence, although ultimately unsuccessful, was certainly substantial and feasible enough to foreclose any Sixth Amendment error. With respect to the record, Your Honors, there's a bit of confusion in the briefs, in petitioner's brief in particular, about the scope of the district court's review of the issue within the context of the record. The petitioner cites to Brecht, and particular language in Brecht, which says that a district court reviewing for harmless error must look to, quote, the record as a whole in determining whether an error of constitutional magnitude had a substantial or injurious effect on the jury's decision. The interesting thing about the petitioner's Brecht inquiry, however, is that the district court never employed Brecht. And in this court's supplemental order from last October, the court asked the parties to discuss whether or not the district court was able to adjudicate fairly the claim here before this court in light of the materials before it. And prior to the respondent's answer in this case, the district court, the petitioner filed a general motion to supplement, which was accompanied by a motion to appoint counsel and a motion to appear before Judge Pallmeyer ad testificandum to argue his case orally. In her in that motion, the petitioner requested that mentioned the fact that he was in possession of the entire trial record or portions thereof if the district judge wanted them. The district judge entered a general order indicating that the motion to supplement was granted. In the respondent's answer, I attached, as part of my Rule 5 exhibits, the most vital and germane portions of the transcript with respect to the issue before the court. At a lengthy offer of proof in the trial court, the petitioner tendered his witnesses and the testimony which way they would have provided, which he now claims should have been included, and that's all before the court, as is the post-conviction trial court hearing record, which shows in more detail what the petitioner would have liked to assess.
And that, in terms of that second batch of evidence,
yes, Your Honor.
With respect to the Spanish Cobras and the firebombing and that kind of thing, there was nothing specifically indicating that Vargas was part of that.
That's correct, Your Honor. I believe there were, at the original offer of proof, there were 6 or 7 instances of violence which the petitioner sought to include in order to bolster his self-defense theory. None of those instances involved the victim, Vargas. And the state argued at trial, wrongly, I have to concede, that this was irrelevant testimony because it did not involve acts by the victim, Vargas, which would have led the petitioner to reasonably conclude he needed to use violence. So in that respect, the appellate court held that it should have been included, but that it was cumulative and would have made no difference in the end because the petitioner was, in fact, able to advance his case, although ultimately unsuccessfully. And I would also mention that with respect to that additional evidence of firebombings and shootings, its relevance is somewhat diminished by the fact, notwithstanding the state appellate court's holding, that the victim was never involved or implicated in any of these violent acts. And certainly that is one factor this court can and should take into consideration in applying Sixth Amendment jurisprudence to the issue. If there are no further questions from the court, I believe I've covered all the points I wanted to. The rest of the arguments in my briefs I stand on, and the district court's opinion should be affirmed. I also note that the petitioner requests that this court not grant the writ, but instead, if it disagrees with my argument regarding the record, it simply remand the case to the district court for consideration in light of the full record. If that's what the petitioner wants, if he doesn't want the writ at this time, I can't argue with that. And if this court finds the entire record is indeed necessary, although I believe it's not, based upon the pleadings and submissions before the district court, we wouldn't argue with a remand for the limited purpose of adjudicating the case with the entire record. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.
Anything further?
Thank you. The evidence that got in was only evidence of threats against Damnitz. Even this playground incident where there were bats involved, the bats were never used. The evidence that didn't get in was evidence of acts of actual violence, and that's why it was so critical to establishing Damnitz's state of mind. And Judge Williams, although in the offers of proof, Vargas was not connected to these incidents of actual acts of violence, the Illinois Appellate Court held that nonetheless, this evidence should have been presented to the jury so that the jury could determine whether or not Damnitz had a reasonable belief that he needed a weapon on that morning. And just going quickly to this issue of the record, it's clear under this court's precedent that the record is not required in order for the federal court to find whether or not there's a constitutional violation, in large part because it has to defer a great bit to the state courts under Section 2254D. However, in doing the Brecht analysis, the Brecht opinion makes clear that the federal review is de novo. In order to do that, the federal court needs the trial transcript to assess the constitutional violation in light of the whole trial. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to both sides. Mr. Warson, you accepted an appointment in this case, and we thank you for your vigorous representation and convey our thanks to Winston and Strom for loaning you to us for this case. Thank you. And now we